Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport, in the place to be on the MIC. Feeling good, right? As you should. We woke up this morning, so that means we won. And speaking of wins, the Titans got a win also. So I know a lot of the fans out there, you guys are enjoying the week. You finally got to celebrate a victory Monday. But guess what? All of that is gone, and now it's time to spin it forward to the next game. And that's going to be when your Titans go to Vegas to face the Raiders. And it's a matchup of 1-4 teams. We'll see what happens. But that being said, we're going to have Ryan McFadden. He's going to make his debut, ESPN NFL Nation Raiders reporter. Looking forward to having him on. And then we'll talk a little shop with Chris Sanders, old fish eye fool on Run TMC. So we got a lot going on, man. And the Titans, they have a lot going on. And I just want to started off just looking at this game, this past one, and I tell you, I don't know that I've seen a more circus-like ending. They managed to find a way to win, and you could tell a relief on the guys, on their spirit, right? You could tell that win, it meant a lot to them. I just want to see how it's going to spin forward, but let's look at the particular instances where you got to see some success from Cameron Ward. And I think that's the most important thing, is Ward showed you that he could do it when it matters. And that's one of the things that Nick Holtz has said. He said, you got to be your best when your best is needed. And I thought that was like the quote of the week. But looking at other quotes after the game, Jeffrey Simmons, I asked him about Cam Ward and just, you know, when you see him come back like that. And he said he told him that's why we drafted you with the number one pick. His calmness, his poise in the pocket. I don't know how many rookie quarterbacks could have that type of poise when the game came down to him and he had the ball in his hands and he knew it. So you see he's starting to win over the players, right? And obviously that's been a process from when he first got here. But you got tangible evidence now in game that he could do it. 13-18, 193 yards. Folks, that 193 yards was more than what he passed in the previous four fourth quarters combined. He did that in one. So I think it's evidence that things could go right. And just to give you a few numbers here, because I found these numbers interesting, per Next Gen Stats, Ward's completed a league low 30.8% of his passes that had 10 or more air yards. 30%. The league is 47. The league average, rather, is 47.9. So he's pretty well below average there. But I tell you what, on that, if you go back and watch that seam route he threw to Calvin Ridley, and first and foremost, let's look at where Ridley was aligned. He was at the slot. And I think that's something to note. He was at the slot. Tyler Lockett was outside. So now you're seeing them, they're moving guys around and trying to get them in positions to make plays. And that was something that they saw, so they put Ridley in the slot. He ran that seam route. Beautiful throw from Cam Ward, and it ended up right in his hands, and that was a 47-yard gain. But what happened on the next play? A drop shot. Yep, that's right. A drop shot to Gunnar Helm, who I think needs to be more involved in the offense. And I thought it was pretty cool because Cam said, or rather Gunnar Helm has said that, you know, Cam saw that on film earlier in the week. And then you also have Peyton McCollum. He saw something as well. And it just so happened that they both saw the same thing. So you have a marriage of the coaching staff and the player seeing something similar. Seattle had done it with Arroyo, there, Elijah Arroyo, former tight end for Cam Ward. But Seattle had done that against the Cardinals, and it was something that they saw that they could attack. I thought that was pretty cool. Actually, you know what? Here's Cam Ward on that, because I asked him about that process, because it's pretty interesting. We have a rookie quarterback, right? He comes in, and he's watching film, and he finds something, and then he puts it in there in the air as something in the environment, right, in the atmosphere, as something that they need to incorporate. And here it was. It happened. So here's Ken Ward on that.
That's what I think the best thing about just myself and the offensive staff is that we really see the same stuff on the field, even in the film room. So a lot of stuff that I think they are already thinking as well. And then I just think it's just really me and Gunner just knowing what, you know, we're both good at, what type of throws I'm good at making, what type of routes he's good at running. His catch rate is, you know, ridiculous for his size. And so, you know, it is good to get him the ball, but we will continue to do it.
So you heard what he said there in regards to just how it happens, and he loves the way everybody's on the same page, and that's good. But we're not going to just focus on the good of that game, even though they won. You know what I mean? And I will say it's no coincidence that Ward had a career-high passing yards, and you know, the Titans got a win, their first win with him at the quarterback. There's no coincidence in that, but you know, we got to talk about the 5-16 in the first half. We got to talk about the way he's consistently missing the underneath receivers. And we got to talk about how he needs to, you know, take his eyes. If it's not there downfield, take your eyes off it and come to the stuff underneath. There are opportunities. And I think that's a way that they can minimize sacks. It's a way that his completion percentage could be improved, because that's not good either, right? And I think when you look at, you know, overall completion percentage, it's 51.8%. We're talking 6.3% lower than any other starter. So, look, make no mistake about it. It has not been good through these five games when you talk about Cam Ward. But, again, he is one of those players that shows you so much promise. You're like, okay, yeah, you got to take the bad with the good, because you believe that there's going to be more good, right, with a player like that. And I think that's really what it comes down to. But Ward, he said it himself, right? He said, you know, there has to be better execution, right? And he admitted to the team, the offense in this case, shooting themselves in the feet, right? Whether it's a penalty like this, if they get off schedule, it's over. Like, cancel Christmas. It's over, because this team, they find themselves in third and long all the time, but that's why they have so many series not ending in scores, because if they don't find success on first and second down to get them in a, you know, more reasonable type of situation, and not one where defenders could pin their ears back and come after the quarterback, they are in trouble. Now, I will say this, the offensive line has played better. You've seen the sacks go down from game to game over the last 3 weeks. I think that is something to note. And then with J.C. Latham, right, you got him, and he's working his way back. So that is something to look at. He practiced on Wednesday, and he said he felt good. It's just a pain threshold that he's dealing with. So that should help some, but they have to figure out a way to be more successful on first and second down. I think one of the ways to be successful is not run it almost every time on first down, right? You know how to start in the game. Okay, yeah, you know what? First play on offense is going to be Tony Pollard running the ball, probably on a dive or something. You know, between the tackles, and what do you see? That every time. So why not play action? Take a shot, right? Imagine if against the Raiders, they go play action, they take a shot downfield to Gunnar Helm on the seam route or to Chim DK on the deep over route. You know what I mean? I think that would give this team so much of a charge and really just pick right up on the momentum that they not only built last Sunday but through the week. Because remember, you build momentum throughout the week and the preparation and stuff that you do. Now, it doesn't always transfer, right? Because we remember a couple weeks ago, everybody was like, man, that Thursday practice was one of the best ever. They proceeded to get skunkballed 26-0 by the Texans. So don't get it twisted. I do understand that momentum isn't everything, but I think it is a part of this game, right? When you could get it in your favor, that is something to look at. But, I mean, again, it took some crazy things for them to win this game, right? We're talking about, you know, a guy fumbling the ball out of the back of the end zone in Amari DiMarcado. You're talking about Dadrian Taylor-Demerson. He gets tackled by the grass, and you know, he falls, and the ball comes out, and it's kicked, and then bounces another time, and Tyler Lockett is Johnny on the spot, and he recovers the fumble in the end zone for a score. Crazy game, crazy game. Kyler Murray getting plunked in the head so hard he has a foot injury. Obviously, they weren't connected. But, you know, it was a surprise to see that he didn't practice some because of that foot injury. But he had to come out. You got Jacoby Brissett coming in. Such an inopportune time for them. But, again, the Titans figured out a way to win the ball game. And I think when you look at that, those are the types of things where the ball actually did bounce their way, right? And when I say the ball bounced their way, you could actually say it literally, you know, in the two things. But it's a matter of things working out in their favor. And I think when you look at this team, this offense specifically, there's more to be expected. They have to be more efficient. They have to be able to get more guys involved. Cam Ward has to start taking the underneath stuff so they could put drives together. Now, of course, you want to have plays where you get those chunks of yards and those chunk plays, like, they typically lead to scoring drives, right? So there's nothing wrong with that, but you want to be able to put things together, keep your defense off the field, right? And I think that's something that didn't happen a lot in the first few games. And in the first half of this game, I would imagine, you know, I have to go back and look, but to see the numbers. But from watching it, it didn't seem like, you know, there was a lot of continuity on offense. And I think that does transfer to defense. But let's also point out something else. Chim Dike, AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. I mean, it's been a long time since the Titans have won a Player of the Week type of award. I think it was Harold Landry, I want to say, in 23. I think that was the case. But regardless, we're talking about, you know, a team that has gone two seasons without a Player of the Week in some facet. So, DK, I love the way, and John Fossil got into it a lot, you know, explaining, you know, how he's able to tempo, how he goes with the ball, right? Because you don't want to run right into the blocking because then you don't get a chance to develop. So you see that little hesitation, and then it's, poof, he goes, right? And Fossil talked about how if he catches it off his mark, and, he, you know, say they have return right, and he catches it on the left, you'll see him, you know, hit that C button. I'm an old school Madden player, so I say the C button, whatever it is now, triangle, X, I don't know. But regardless, you know what I'm saying, hit that turbo button to get over there to where he needs to be. Or if he catches it too deep, you know, you see him put the burners on, right, so he can get back on track where he needs to be. And I think, you know, when you look at the blocks, you know, he shouted out DK, that is, he shouted out David Martin Robinson, James Williams, Kendall Brooks, Van Jefferson. Like, he shouted out a lot of guys, and he said, you know, that's the reason why he's able to do what he does. And you always like when a young player gets it, and Chim DK gets it. Now, a part of him getting it, and Derek Mason and I were talking about this in the other studio, and D. Mace is right. They need to get him involved more in the offense, end arounds, you know, jet sweeps, screens, deep overs. Oh, man, that deep over. That's actually what I called for the first play of the game. Play action, deep over, let him go ahead and clear that hash, hit him as soon as he clears that hash, he catches it and outruns everybody. You know, that's the kind of play that he brings. But it's more than just that, right? You got Elik Iyemanu, who he has to be more consistent, you know, but he's someone else. I really think, though, Gunnar Helm is a guy that got to continue to get involved, because to me, he's a really good young player. I enjoy watching him play. He knows how to get open. He knows how to find those holes and zones. So those are some of the things to look at and consider as this thing goes on. And I mean, this is an opportunity for the Titans to get another win. In fact, I think that they should win this game, honestly. We'll get a status on Brock Bowers when Ryan McFadden comes on, but I'm not so sure that he makes it to the game. And if he doesn't, you know, Ashton Jeanty, step right up. You're going to be the guy that's targeted. You're going to be the guy that's the focal point of the Titans defense. And speaking of the Titans defense, that darn Cedric Gray, he continues to ball out and pile up the tackles. And he actually, I thought it was cool on Wednesday, he had the black jersey on. And what does the black jersey mean? It's the dirtiest player of the week, the dirty player of the week. And that's an award that the Titans have started to give out. And we know that this is a generation where it's all about recognition, right? You know, the guys, they want you to recognize them. So that is a way the Titans did that. And, I mean, he does the dirty work. This is a guy, if you remember, you know, draft time, like, I was crazy about Cedric Gray. He and Edge Jenkins, like, those were the play, the linebackers that I really liked. And, you know, Peyton Wilson as well. But it's pretty cool that you're seeing the game slow down for him and Gray be able to be all over the place making plays. So keep track of that. They're going to need him a lot with Genty and the way they like to run the ball with Genty. And then, obviously, you know, out of the backfield. That's what we drew up on Whiteboard Wednesday. You know, they'll give him opportunities to catch the football. So definitely pay attention to all that, man. And look, it's going to be a good game. You know, I think when you look at this team, the Raiders, that is, they have their limitations, right? They're obviously good, well coached with Pete Carroll. We know he's going to be a good coach, but I think there are some limitations and there's some opportunities for this Titans team to make some things happen. So don't be surprised if they come back with another win. It's hard at this point, like with how they've played this season to say that, but I mean, look, I wouldn't be shocked. So definitely look forward to covering this game and what's next with the Titans. And what's next for you is going to be a commercial break. We'll be right back. I got to pay some bills, and we'll be right back. We're on TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
As the music fades and the lights dim, we're going to go to Miami. And now, starting at point guard for your Miami Heat, out of Syracuse University, number 20, Sherman Douglas.
And now, starting for the Los Angeles Lakers, Michael Cooper.
Defensive specialist.
Man,
you know,
anytime
you mention Michael Cooper, all I could think about was Dr. J dunking on him.
Oh, man.
he dunked on his neck with that windmill. Look, that was first time I can remember a player going up and then knowing, all right, let me go ahead and duck my way out of this.
That's funny. What's up, big dog? What's good with you?
Hey, you know, it's pretty interesting how much nicer it is covering a team after a win, you know. Like Brian Callahan said, the coffee tastes a little better. You know, the sun shines a little bit brighter. And that's what's going on for this team. It's going to be important to be able to stack it. So I guess what I want to talk to you about is just, all right, so you look at the pocket of play, that 13 to 18, 193 yards in the fourth quarter for Cam Ward. That's more than he passed for in all fourth quarters up until that point. What do you think of that performance he did in the clutch there? And what do you think they could do to carry it forward into this Raiders game?
Yeah, man, just watching what he was doing, he was in his element, because when he was at the University of Miami, he was consistently making plays. And if you look at some of the games that he had in college, a lot of those games were on the line. So now you get with the Tennessee Titans, and he gets to the fourth quarter, and he's in that same position. It's kind of like riding a bike. And just watch – listen, TD, just watching his body language, just watching how he's just going through his progression. Because if you look in the first quarter, he kind of struggled with that. But when he got into his element and felt comfortable – it was like riding a bike. I mean, he just kind of surveying the field, keeping his eyes downfield. You know, even if he got off the spot, he didn't panic and just throwing strikes to Calvin Ridley and just making plays. And that's what you want to see with your number one quarterback. But, yeah, I agree with you, too. They still got to stack some more wins.
Yeah, stacking wins is imperative right now. I mean, this coaching staff, they don't think it's safe just because you got that win, you know. But when you look at trying to stretch that over a full period of a game, what can they do to get that part of it?
You know, GD, I think they have to start fast. I mean, it's like they're waiting for somebody to make a play. They're waiting for Cam Ward to make a play. They're waiting for something big to happen, maybe in a return game. But I think, though, your guys, your stars, have to make plays from start to finish, because if you look at who won the game, it was your stars who won the game. Who's your stars? Cam Ward. Who's your stars? Calvin Ridley. Who's your stars on defense? Simmons. So your stars have to start fast. It's kind of like – right when they get off the bus to go, and then get into the stadium, it's like, okay, oh, we got a game. And then we got to wait until the game's on the line in the fourth, third, and fourth quarter to make something happen. So if they can make a complete game and have that, bottle up that fourth quarter, you know, in the first quarter, and then I think they can do something with that situation.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And if you could kind of think back, I know it's been, you know, 40 years. But, if you, but, you know, when you play – if you could kind of recall two-minute situations, because it's a great point that Nick Holtz made, and it's something that I've thought about as well. So how much have you seen, like, being in two-minute, like, how much have you seen that make a difference?
You know, it does make a difference, and here's why it makes a difference. It's because it starts in practice. And when it starts in practice, we have this we call situational football. And situational football is you got a minute left, and you got no timeouts, so you got to get a field goal or a touchdown. And the reason why it's so important that you practice it in practice, because when you get in those situations, everybody knows what to do. Receivers know what to do, how to get out of bounds, making the right reads, you know, throwing the ball away when you have to and not getting a sack. Those are the things that you work on. And when you get into the game, it's imperative that you work on those things that you do in practice, because when you work on those things in practice, it's going to come to fruition. Because when I played with the Tennessee Titans, we would do it every Wednesday. We would call situational ball. Yeah, we had 7-on-7. Yeah, we had 9-on-7. But then Coach Fisher would call everybody up, the offense and defense, and they would say, okay, you got a minute left in the game, you got no timeout, you got to get a field goal. So in our mind, we had that ingrained in our mind, so now when we get into the game, everybody knew exactly what to do. So if they can keep doing that and everybody does their job, I think they can be okay.
How much did you notice, like, it limiting the defense, though? It's pretty cool. Like, if you could catch the defense in a package that, you know, you could take advantage of, you run tempo and it stays that way, huh?
Yeah, you run tempo, but they don't have enough time to switch guys out. So now when you don't switch the guys out, you know those big defensive line guys, they get tired. So when you got Cam Ward, listen, when you got Cam Ward running around and you're trying to tackle him, and then all of a sudden they come back the next play and they go NASCAR, and NASCAR has just heard him get on the ball, and then all of a sudden you're trying to line up and you're dog tired. You're dog tired, and you got your hands on your knees. That's when it's time to strike. Why? Because we practice that in practice.
What do you think of Calvin Ridley's performance? He has some crucial catches there.
Yeah. Who's that? Ridley. I thought Ridley played great, man. I mean, here's what I love that he does is he's creating separation. He comes off the ball full speed, and just like that 9 route that he ran, you know, to set up the field goal, I mean, he just understands how to, you know, win at the line of scrimmage and when to put his hands out at the last minute, because the defensive back didn't have bad coverage, is that he put his hands out at the last second. So I love his performance. You know, he had 130-something yards and made some spectacular catches. But now, just like what we talk about each and every week, we need to stack up those plays, we need to stack up those wins, and he needs to be consistent each and every game from here on out.
You could stack things negatively and positively, and he had been stacking things on the negative side. And we talked about the mental part of it, how that impacts you. But tell me a little bit about how when you're out there making plays and doing what he did on Sunday, how does that impact you as well?
Man, it does. It makes you feel unstoppable. Because if you look at when he played the first game against the Denver Broncos, he was kind of gun-shy. You know, that little dig he tried to catch, it was like there was no confidence. But then you look earlier in the game when he was catching the ball all throughout the game against the Arizona Cardinals, look at the last pass that he catches. Look at the confidence that he reached out and snagged that thing, as opposed to the first game being on short. So when you're catching the football and you're a part of the offense and you feel a part of the offense, now you're going to feel confident and now you're going to feel boldness to say, you know what, wherever the ball is, that's my ball. And that's what we've been waiting to see with Calvin Ridley, because last year we saw it. We saw that and when the ball was in the air, that's mine. And when you're consistently in the game plan and you're making plays early, you're going to have that confidence to make more plays.
So when you look at this game and spinning forward to the Raiders game, what are some things you see from the Raiders that you think the Titans could take advantage of offensively?
You know, I think they're going to have to attack the running game. I mean, I know they have some big dudes. I know they got Crosby. I know they got Lalalu. I can't pronounce his name right. Those guys have sacks, but I think you need to run the ball with Pollard. I'm sorry, with Pollard. when you do that, it'll set up the pass. And I think that if they establish the run going against their front and get in those chunks of yards, I think it's going to make those the offense better. That's just my provision.
No, I could agree with that. I think if you're able to run the ball on the road, it's just a different situation. And then, like you said, to set up the play action passing game, that's something. And it opens up the windows, right? So great
it does.
Point
Absolutely.
There. When you flip it to the – oh, go ahead.
No, and then another thing that they can do is, you know, if you look at their quarterback situation, Geno Smith, I mean, he's completing 65% of his passes, but here's the kicker. He's been sacked 16 times, and here's another kicker. He's thrown 9 interceptions. So now you got a secondary that's been giving up explosive plays. Now you're going to get some interception. Why? Because you have a quarterback that's prone to throwing the ball away.
Well, yeah, and that's where I was going defensively. And you have an even bigger kicker with Brock Bowers being hurt, right? He's been dealing with the injury since the start of the season, since the season opener. If he's not out there, like, how much do you think that changes the Raiders offense?
It changes a lot, because now you're putting your pressure on a rookie running back, which is Ashton Jeanty. I mean, you're going to put all the pressure on him, because, you know, with Brock Bowers been out, he's one of those explosive tight ends that can just, man, he can do everything, run the route, create separation, right, make those explosive plays. But then you look at the wide receivers, you got Jacoby Myers, you got Trey Tucker, you got Jack Beck. Those are guys that are okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to load everybody in the box and dare you to beat me in the pass. So those are the things you can really take advantage of.
So on the way out, who do you think is going to have the most impressive performance, and what's your game prediction?
I'm going with I'm going to go with I want to go with Calvin Ridley, but I think I know you're going to laugh at me with this, but I think I'm going to go with Chig. I think Chig's going to have a big game, because you look at some of the games that he's played, and he's been making some big-time plays and some run after the catch. So I'm actually going to go with Chig, because the one thing they're going to do, if Max Crosby tries to, you know, blitz and do all that crazy stuff, throw those little quick passes to Chig and let him, you know, use his athletic ability. So I'm going to say Chig. And then the game, I'm going to say Tennessee Titans 24, and I'm going to say Raiders 21.
There you have it right there, man. Appreciate you. We'll definitely get back.
Appreciate
and we'll talk about this next week.
Appreciate you, big dog. Thank you, man.
This is Jefferson, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You hear the song. That's an old school, man. Kumo D, Wild Wild West, because we're going to the west side, Las Vegas Raiders, and that's who the Titans are facing this week, so why not bring in? And this is his debut on Talking with TD, my guy, ESPN NFL Nation, Raiders recorder, Ryan McFadden. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, bro. How's everything going with you? Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. I appreciate you coming on, and I guess we could just start right from the top, because you had some news this week with Jermaine Pratt being released. What was the deal with that?
I think when you look at someone like Jermaine Pratt, it was kind of a bit of a surprise, because Jermaine was out of their inside linebacker room. He was probably the best guy in coverage compared to someone like Devin White. But I think it was more of a fit, one thing, and two, just about playing time. They rotate their inside linebackers quite a bit during games. So I think a combination of team success and, you know, a fit and probably splitting playing time, I think all that factored into the decision for him to leave and eventually sign with the Indianapolis Colts.
Well, look, times are hard over there in Las Vegas, just like they are here in Nashville for the football team. And I saw your story about Pete Carroll and the 1-4 record, and I thought it was interesting. He said himself that he's not processing it poorly. What can you tell us about that?
I think one thing about Pete Carroll, and this is something he said when he first got here in February, is just that he wants to win right away. You know, he's 74 years old. This is a guy who has won at every level he's coached in, from college to NFL. He thought he had an opportunity to fast track the rebuild or retool process, or however you want to describe it, for the Raiders. And, you know, that's why you go out and give Max Crosby a long-term deal. That's why you bring in Chip Kelly as your offensive coordinator and sign Geno Smith, acquire Geno Smith as your quarterback and give him a 3-year, $75 million deal. So he thought he had the pieces in place to, be competitive right away in a crowded AFC West division. But, you know, those plans have not gone as expected. I don't think he anticipated Geno Smith to lead the league in 9 interceptions. I don't think he anticipated some of the young guys outside of Aston Genty to take a longer time in terms of their development. So, yeah, it's a process. And, you know, Pete Carroll's probably one of the more optimistic guys you'll ever be around. So you understand why he had that hope that this team could be competitive right away. But at the same time, it's like when you looked at the roster going into the season, you kind of had an idea that, you know, if they get one or two injuries or someone's not playing up to their standards or their expectations, it's going to be a pretty long season. That's what we've seen so far.
Yeah, and that's the whole issue. You mentioned the Geno Smith struggles, the 9 interceptions. I know each one has their own story, but what has really been the area where Smith has struggled?
I think if you go back and look at the Colts game, I think is a summary of everything that's gone wrong here with Geno Smith. Yes, he talks about like the tip pass to Jack Besh, and you can credit that the Colts could have been flagged for being offsides there. But then his second interception where he tried to fit the ball into tight coverage with Dante Thornton, that's something he's been doing all year. He's taking a lot of risks. This is someone who has a lot of trust in his arm, but, you know, that can be good and bad, and we're seeing it's been a lot more bad than good when you're trying to fit the ball in a double coverage, triple coverage, and guys are, you know, picking them apart right there. I think another issue is that sometimes he's predetermined his throws, which is making it easier for defenders to know where he's going with the ball. There was a bunch of times in the last game where he's staring down his target. He already has an idea of who he wants to go through at the moment the ball snap. And that's not only leading to turnovers, but that's also leading to him missing open targets on the field. There's a handful of times against Indianapolis where he had so many guys wide open, but he predetermined where he was going to go with the ball, and he just did not see those guys on the field. And also, too, another issue that doesn't get talked about a lot is that he's holding on to the ball too long. There was a play, I believe, earlier in the game where he had Ian Thomas wide open in the red zone, and he didn't let the ball go right away and let him get a sack. So those, when you couple into all those issues that I've listed, that's what's led to Geno Smith's struggles. And it's not just like the interceptions. Yeah, the interceptions are something, you know, you see from a number standpoint. It's more to that. It's predetermining your target, missing wide open guys and just holding on to the ball. So all those issues has been impacting Geno Smith in this offense so far.
And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Raiders reporter Ryan McFadden. You just dished a whole lot on Geno Smith. So tell me this about Aston Genty. What is this tie between him and Michael Myers? tell the listeners about that.
So the whole idea, the stance he's been doing since college, at least since high school, where he doesn't put his hands on the knees, he just stands straight up. It kind of gives you like the Michael Myers type vibe. If you're familiar with the Halloween movies, mm-hmm. If you ever seen, you know, Michael Myers before he attacked his victim, he just stands up straight. Like motionless. Right? And that's it, kind of like an intimidation factor. It was crazy because Chip Kelly said the coaches that told him to go back to like a traditional running back stance, because he didn't think that could translate to the NFL. However, as soon as he went back to that Michael Myers stance, that trademark stance of his, you've seen the numbers picked up. His offensive production picked up. Now, is that the reason for that? I don't know. Maybe it's more of a mental thing, but wherever he's doing, I think the Raiders should not tell him not to go back to what he was doing earlier in the season, because, you know, standing straight up and looking like Michael Myers has worked out for him so far. He came off another. He had 158 total yards against Chicago Bears, then followed that with another solid performance against the Indianapolis Colts. So we're starting to see more and more the guy that the Raiders drafted at top 10 overall and who was a Heisman Trophy finalist last year.
Yeah, so we will look to see more this Sunday. That's going to be an interesting matchup. But the biggest guy, the one that everybody is most concerned about and focused on, is Brock Bowers. What's the latest with him?
He did not practice today. This is Pete Carroll. So this is he. It's a week-to-week situation in terms of the knee injury. Pete Carroll, like I said, he calls it day-to-day because that makes him feel better, but it's clearly that, you know, Brock Bowers has not been 100%, and they try to play through it, but after the Patriots game, his numbers has just gone down drastically. He has not looked like the same guy, which led to him not playing against Indianapolis. And like I said, he wasn't out here on Wednesday's practice. So it's up in the air. We'll see how the rest of the week plays out. I don't think he will play on Sunday. I don't anticipate him playing on Sunday because he really needs to rest his knee. It is something where, to me, I think the team prolonged it, where they kept them going out there, and really it didn't help out at all. They've lost four straight games since the season opener. So I think the best path forward is what they should have done after he got hurt in New England is to give him rest and to give him the rest so he is back out there fully healthy. Because when he is fully healthy, he's the best tight end in football. Mm-hmm. He is Geno Smith's security blanket. You'll see how the passing game looked in week one with him out there on the field and how it looked since he's not been out there on the field. So you need a fully healthy Brock Bowers moving forward. And right now, that's what they're trying to get him back to that status.
So if you flip it to the other side of the field, Max Crosby, obviously, you know, this is your first season there. What are your initial impressions of him?
I think Max Crosby is one of the best defenders in football. It's just the way he's the most menacing players in football as well, just the way he can attack the quarterback. And not only attack the quarterback, but he's very strong against the run as well. To me, like, this is what, like, his performance against the Chicago Bears or something, it was one of the best performances I've seen from a defensive player up close, the way he impacted that game. Three tackles for loss, three batted passes, an interception, a forced fumble. And, like, he did it all in week four. But at the same time, when you look at the rest of the defense, Max Crosby is just one player. He only does so much. And, you know, this defense has been a little bit better than I expected. They've been solid against the run. I believe three of the four games they've played, they've held their opponents under 100 yards rushing. Even against the Colts, like, they put up 40 points. But, you know, Jonathan Taylor only had 66 yards, and the Colts had in total 96 yards rushing. It's just that, you know, Jonathan Taylor had three touchdowns because the Colts were just gifted solid field position throughout the whole game, from a blocked punt to turnovers. They would just get the solid field position throughout that whole game. So there's nothing much you can do, the defense can do when they're back against the walls because of that. Another issue is, even though they've been solid against the run, outside of Mac, they really has not been able to generate a lot of consistent pressure at the quarterback. I believe Daniel Jones, had his jersey was clean. He didn't get sacked at all against the Colts. So they're trying to find some consistency in the pass rush. There's a lot of questions with the secondary. You know, it's a fairly young secondary. They got Eric Stokes on one side, and then on the opposite side is Kai Bukele, who's a second-year player, but was on his fourth team in 2 years. That's been a challenge itself. He leads the league in receiving yards allowed at 319. And then outside of that is Darian Porter. He made his first start of the season because Eric Stokes was out. But, you know, it's still been a learning process for him to get adjusted to NFL play. This is a guy who came into the NFL for a lot of upside, but he only started in seven career games at Iowa State at cornerback because he transitioned from wide receiver to cornerback. So that's probably been one of their biggest issues, not only their pass, just the passing game in general, just their inconsistency in terms of pressuring the quarterback, and then also too, they have had a lot of struggles in coverage as well. Just because of, you know, to me, I think you're working with a lot of young guys, and not only that, it's just the talent is not there yet.
Yeah, there's some names. Darnay Holmes, I remember him, UCLA. Jeremy Chinn. Actually, Holmes, he and Van Jefferson, man, the Senior Bowl, they had some battles. But Jeremy Chinn, obviously Devin White. But the name I want to ask you about, Jamal Adams. Real quick, I see he's listed, you know, as a weak side backer. Did that process of him going to linebacker, like, did that happen immediately?
Yes, it did. It happened as soon as he signed. Pete Carroll pulled him to the side as soon as they signed him and said, hey, we want you to play linebacker. And, you know, this has been a smooth transition. I think he's been surprisingly solid because what he's been so effective against the run, and which you like about him. But I think when you look at, I think he's really has made a strong impact in that linebacker room. But I think overall it's just that when he's out there, they like to play guys close to the line of scrimmage quite a bit. So when you watch that defense, you're going to see Jeremy Chinn, Jamal Adams, Devin White, Jermaine Pratt. They like to play a lot of guys close to a lot of scrimmage and play a lot of single high cover. So Isaiah Pulumau is like, you know, the only guy back there, safety. And I think if you're not creating the pressure you like at the quarterback, it's had its limitations because they're just getting picked apart in the intermediate game. And that's what happened against the Colts, where Daniel Jones is just picking them apart in the intermediate game with Tyler Warren and his guys. So it comes like Jamal has had his impact, especially from a run defense standpoint, but from a pass defense, that's where the inconsistencies lie, because if you're not getting to the quarterback the way you like, you're just leaving your guys in the secondary just out there, you know, out there hanging because they're getting picked apart in the intermediate game because there's no support.
There you have it right there, Ryan McFadden. Ryan, I appreciate you. I'll make sure I hit you up when I get out there, man. And we'll definitely have to connect, man.
Almost definitely, man. I can't wait to see you out here.
So that was Ryan McFadden. And I tell you, I like the way he explained the Geno Smith situation. But, I mean, look, as Brian Callahan said, that's a guy that could get hot and make some things happen. So don't just brush this over. I know there's a lot of hype and excitement after the Titans got the W, but that doesn't guarantee this one. and folks, this team is still a struggling team, a work in progress. So definitely appreciate Ryan McFadden, ESPN NFL Nation Raiders reporter, for coming on. Appreciate my guy Connor Newt over here making it happen, as well as Chris Sanders, right, on Run TMC, man. But I tell you what, above all else, appreciate each of you. Definitely continue to rock with us. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you find your great listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.